achieve your deepest dreams, enhance your healing, or offer your best to the world? Then visit us at www.findtoanew.com, where we've been since 1998. As you search our website, you will find encouragement, inspiration, and amusing information. If you are ready for intuitive counseling, transformational coaching, or a personalized interactive guided imagery recording, send an email to helen@findtoanew.com or call her at 877-469-5505, extension 1.
Welcome, everyone, and happy Mother's Day. And as we gather today, let's call our angels and spirits to gather with us in light and love. As always, I want to welcome those listening live, those listening to our reruns, and those listening later in the archives. Hello, hello, hello. You might be listening to us at a different time, but you really are with us right now. Right here. I hope you like what you hear and benefit. And I hope you feel moved to share some of your thoughts or insights. And to those who joined us last week, thank you for your wonderful emails and questions. And of course, to our core group of faithful listeners, we extend our gratitude. If you're a new listener, and you want to just listen, by all means, just be a guest. But if you'd like to interact, even though you're new, all you have to do is email or call in. We welcome everyone in light and love. And again, happy Mother's Day to all our mothers. May your day have been as wonderful as mine. I know you're later in the evening, so your Mother's Day is winding down. Mine's still in the afternoon. I had the privilege of being pampered by my husband, Scott, and my youngest son, Joshua, all day. And after the show, my oldest son, George, who had to work today, will be taking me to Taormina, a delightful Sicilian restaurant, for a late Mother's Day dinner. We've had a glorious day here in Hawaii with beautiful trades. I so look forward to our special time together. It's so good to be here and connect. And to know that you're holding, and I am holding, and together we're all holding the sacred space of light and love and empowerment. I'm your host, Helen Smalley Bauer, and like I like to say, guide. So for our new listeners, you're probably saying, what is this fine-tune you? Well, first and foremost, we're nothing without all of you wonderfully grounded people who do hold the sacred space of light and love while we're on the air. And you hold it a lot when we're off the air, too. And we do cherish our wonderful listener base. You're the foundation of our program. And we so love the amazing guests that appear on this program. Today we're going to have Mike Quinn, and he'll be with us shortly. He wrote The Uncommon Path. And then on May 23rd, 2 weeks from now, our special guest will be Patricia McGivern. You don't want to miss this show. She's the author of Angel Babies, Messages from Miscarried and Other Lost Babies. So that'll be 2 weeks from today, Patricia McGivern. You know, Fine Tune You is talk radio for your mind, your body, and your spirit. And this is where we participate and practice enlightenment by fine-tuning our mind and our body and our spirit. And we're careful after we leave the show. We're careful how we live our lives. It's all of us who make Fine-Tune You the success it's become. We gather each week a wonderful group of like-minded individuals connecting to the show, receiving and sharing insights, information, and awareness, and then taking our new understanding that we've acquired out into the world. You know, this is a wonderful time of space and light to receive and share, but we have to remember, we all live in the world. This program isn't about going off and living in isolation or going into a cave. It's about taking our insight, our awareness, and our understanding out into the world and living it, actually living it every day. And so we really practice the grounding of our spiritual principles by using our tools of transformation and our tools for clearing our emotional body and bringing into line our little self, you know, our ego, to our higher self, our spirit. That's kind of it in a nutshell, and you kind of can call it metaphysical if you want. You know, what I receive from my spiritual guides is that it's not about intellectualizing fine-tune you or talking about fine-tune you. We do discuss the principles here, but I'm talking about just going around and saying, I'm fine-tuning, or understanding our fine-tuning, but it's actually attempting and working at living our fine-tuning. So that's the question to ask. How can you live more fine-tuned? How can you be more consciously insightful? Well, it requires those spiritual tools, and that's one thing we do talk about every week on this show, the stressing of our spiritual tools, or repatterning, or clearing emotional garbage out of the way. We need to remember that there's a huge difference between asking for something from our ego, you know, our little ego mind, and asking from our spirit, coming through and allowing it to guide our ego personality. So more and more the nature of our spirit and our spirit's path and our spirit's unfolding, and then the expression of our spirit, we need to examine how we're doing that. We all know we can create from our ego mind, but not everyone creates or strives to create from their higher self, their spirit mind. We are all sparks of our higher power, the universe of love, God. We're all created beings. We don't have to stop creating and living at the ego level. We can. We can stay there at the ego level. Or we can create at our spirit self level and achieve and expand our consciousness. Please remember that fine-tune you, we're live on the radio right now. And I put the emphasis on live because people listen through the internet and from all over the world. This last week I had a lovely email from a lady from Spain saying she so enjoyed the show, and also one from a young man in India. So we are being listened to all over the world, and I would love to hear from those of you who are listening from other countries and also from 50 states. And we're live because we're together here right now in this wonderful time, in this present moment, in this gift to us. So what else is fine-tune you? You know, we are interactive. We do love interaction. And you can be part of our interaction through email, where you can ask questions, give us comments or feedback. Also, remember, you can call us at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I do know some of you just like to listen and breathe in and embrace the sacred space of love and light and empowerment. And no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, we're just glad that you're with us. I am so humbled and inspired as I read through your emails and continue to follow the fine-tuning happening around the world, both individually and collectively. It's just so exciting to hear from the people starting their fine-tuning journey. And then there's those of you who've heard some bit of information and had that aha moment, and it produced an increased commitment to your fine-tuning. And then, of course, we have those who are experiencing and reflecting and deepening their commitment to their higher spirit level on almost a daily basis. You are all Every single one of you are such an inspiration to me. You know, we're all in those varying stages of growth, supporting and encouraging each other as we proceed along the path of fine-tuning and being spirit-led, of strengthening our alignment to our spirit and living our life's purpose, our spirit's purpose. Please remember and use Fine-Tune You as a resource, a connecting point, a sharing point for all our divine minds. Here we love to examine our spiritual selves and challenge ourselves. What can we expand on this week? So as we come together each week to share what's going on in our lives individually, we look at how our choices empower every single one of our lives through light and love collectively. It's this amazing connecting we all feel. And I'm so honored to be here and just to be a small part of this journey. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment or share your personal growth in your journey, remember that our number is 888-815-9756, or you can email me at helen@finetuneyou.com. And as always, your listening support is always felt and appreciated. Other ways you can stay in contact and connected through the week are on Facebook, where at Fine Tune You, or you could enter my name, Helen Smalley Bauer. And you can also visit our website, finetuneyou.com. You might enjoy going to our website and signing up for our newsletter. I do send them out every week or two, and I send out something to reflect on or hopefully an inspirational thought. I always try to include something cute or sweet and the occasional cartoon. Always there'll be a quote. It's a really short newsletter. It's just intended to be a moment to lift your spirit or give you a smile. Remember, you can always connect through email. This would be helen@finetuneyou.com. And always remember, you can call me at 877-469-5505. We are on Hawaii time. Sometimes I do receive calls in the middle of the night because we are six hours behind the East Coast. Your noon is our 6 a.m. But if you need to talk, I don't care what time it is, you call. So let's take a short commercial break, and we'll see you on the other side, where we'll be joined by Mick Quinn, author of The Uncommon Path.
O's Acupuncture is where modern technology is blended with Eastern-style wellness. O's approach is to combine the old with the latest scientific technology. He transforms various ancient texts, then uses Hippocrates' principles to combine the best of Eastern and Western healing techniques. O provides you with the latest of modern alternatives, along with the most traditional of Eastern healing techniques. It's time to start taking care of your mind, body, and spirit. Achieve balanced health. Outlive your friends. Defy time. Change your destiny. O's, located at 8 Immortal Center, 1188 Bishop Street, Suite 2409, in beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii. Call 548-7711 to schedule your evaluation. Make an appointment today. Call 548-7711.
Well, we had a couple of glitches, but I am happy to tell you that Mick Quinn is here, the author of The Uncommon Path of Awakening Authentic Joy, an integral guide to uncovering concealed conditioning. Mick was a Wall Street CEO with sales of over $35 million with his three startup companies. And then he made a radical shift and retired in his mid-30s. He realized he didn't have authentic joy in his life and was not on a path that served him. And so for the next few years, he traveled around the world and he went to three different continents. He researched and wrote on many great traditions and religions, and along the way encountered many teachers on all levels of enlightenment. And that's what his book is all about. It's an amazing story, and so is my guest, Mick Quinn. Mick, I really welcome you, and I so thank you for your patience.
No worries, Helen. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
No, I this is the technology is still a little bit awesome to me.
A bit awesome. That's a good word.
Well, it is. It's awesome. You know, before we start, I have to tell you that besides all the insights that I've gleaned from your book, I so enjoyed the moments that I picked up your Irish lilt in your writing. Sometimes it actually made me feel like I was visiting Ireland. I just have to tell you that. It was just beautiful.
Really? Actually, in the, you're the first person to actually ever say that, that it's actually in the writing. How interesting.
Oh, wow. Now, well, I'm an avid reader, and when I read, I just pick up the spirit, and I really believe you have the lilt right in there. I'm sorry.
Wow, that's interesting. It's like the brogue in the writing. I'd never thought
yes,
of that.
It's there. It's there, and I actually hear it. It's just very exciting. Anyway, you know, you have the most interesting story, and you know, you had everything. You had it all. Why wasn't it enough?
Well, you know, even on the way to gathering up all of those things and possessions and titles and accolades, it really wasn't even enough as I was in the process of getting it. And I was kind of hoping that when I reached the end of the trail that it actually would be enough, but it never really was. I mean, it's a very interesting question. I think it's a level of development that we really have to go through if we're really interested in you know, really embracing our full potential. Is that this is one of our potentials, the potentials to, you know, to be financially stable or financially independent or to have those kinds of experiences. And they really don't lead to the end of the rainbow. They're just one more step.
Right. What was your defining moment?
I would say it was one morning when I was I lived on New York's Fifth Avenue for a while, and I worked on New York's Fifth Avenue for a while at simultaneously, and some mornings I would choose to walk down to work, and I remember one morning walking down noticing a neighbor who was a couple of doors down, and he had a number of different cars, and he would choose to drive one car over another. I'm not sure why. It was a Porsche, and then there was a Ferrari, and then there was a beautiful BMW. And I remember looking at all the things he had, looking at all the stuff I had, and it seemed like this desire for more was endless. And I said, oh, my God, this is never going to end.
Oh.
Right? All this wanting and wanting and wanting and wanting. So that was a pretty disastrous moment, actually.
So how much longer after that did it take you to choose a new way?
It was quite a few years, actually, because, you know, sometimes we're you know, that which is most obvious is most ignored.
Right.
And I would say from that point, it was probably a good 1, 2, 3, 4, probably like 6 years. I mean,
okay.
it really took a while. I went through another startup, actually two more startups after that time. And it was only when I really became serious about delving into the practice of meditation and really focusing on what it meant to go beyond body, mind, and emotions, that
right.
I realized that another way was entirely possible. And it certainly included all of these things. You know, we can't deny this level of development. We can't deny the power of financial independence, but it's not all that there is. So it was 6 years later.
Was that around 9/11?
It was right before.
So you made the decision beforehand.
Well, you know what, Helen? I'm not sure that I made the decision. I was on a long-term meditation retreat with a very wonderful teacher called Andrew Cohen in the south of France, and I had an experience in meditation. We used to do 2 and 3 hour sessions of meditation over a period of 2 weeks during his retreats. And What happened was, after that particular event, I realized that the way that I had been, let's say, heading, my trajectory in life was entirely conditioned by my culture and the culture that I had embraced, the American culture, right? First by the Irish culture and then secondly by the American culture. And this happened 2 weeks before 9/11, so I returned to New York and attempting to figure out what I was going to do with this business image that I spent 7 years building up. And of course that all came tumbling down in 9/11.
Right.
And that wasn't really, kind of in the plan, to be honest with you, because I wasn't expecting to lose my entire business and income in 7 minutes or however long that whole thing took. So I'm not sure, as a result of the experience, I'm not sure that I made the choice. I think somewhere the choice got made and it was just up to me to kind of put it together after that.
I think that's awesome, actually. I really do. So I know you said you've worked with Andrew Cohen. So who are some of the other teachers that you've met and learned along the way?
Well, in the Uncommon Path, and you know, you mentioned it in the introduction, it is a combination of what I see, in my humble opinion, that are four of the most advanced teachings and technologies that have come out in let's say the human potential movement in the last 50 years. And right. And starting with the most recent one would be the process known as Big Mind, Big Heart, which is a combination of Zen teachings and Carl Jung's work on shadow and voice dialogue all combined as one process. This was developed by a Zen master called Genpo Roshi, who's based in Salt Lake City. He's a student, uh-huh. or was a student of Maizumi Roshi, and he's a Dharma brother of Bernie Glassman. So a highly respected individual, and has created this amazing process which we use in our coaching work quite effectively. And the second one would be the teachings of Andrew Cohen and Evolutionary Enlightenment, which he has been developing those for the last 25 years or so. And on top of that then would be Ken Wilber's Integral Theory and, you know, the Equal Model, uh-huh. Minds uh-huh. of Development. And then the oldest one, which began in the 50s, was kind of renewed in the 80s and 90s, is called Spiral Dynamics. It was developed by Clara Graves and since, you know, brought back to life by John Beck and Chris Cowan. It's a wonderful theory of levels of evolution according to cultural values. So these are all very brand new teachings that have emerged and techniques. And when they're combined, and this is what I, you know, as I said, humbly attempted to do in The Uncommon Path, with my own experiences, it produces a way of shifting perspectives that sustains growth.
Right, right. I think you did it very beautifully, you know. But, you know, Mick, I work with a lot of people who've been traumatized and deal with a tremendous amount of shadow issues. So as we discuss your book, I'm wondering if you could maybe talk about some of the adjustments that a person who's coming out of severe trauma could make and still make great strides from the keys that are given in your book. It's just keep that kind of in the back of your mind, if you don't mind, because
sure.
As I say, these are it's a huge part of my population.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah, and could you suggest someone who actually is quite fragile and suspicious, what could they glean from the Uncommon Path to help them shift away from their fears?
Well, I mean, that's a huge question that you're asking right there.
Yes.
And it really is. But I will do my best to address that. And I think the most important thing to say to anybody at that, you know, dealing with the situations you're speaking of, and also people at who have maybe moved beyond that, I think we need to honor the path of psychotherapy and the path that emerges beyond that. I think that one of the most important things is to know that a way beyond that level of suffering is possible. And I use a metaphor, you know, when the first mountaineer crosses over a new ridge, it's quite difficult. And, you know, sooner or later somebody follows him or her and the path becomes more worn. And at this point in human evolution, there are quite a number of very clear paths leading beyond, let's say, the type of personal suffering or suffering that's created by let's say, trauma from external events or from other individuals or from cultural conditioning that's just inflicted on us because that's who we are as human beings. Right. I think the paths are there. So it's to trust that the answers are there, assuming you keep seeking.
Yeah. Grabbing hold of the trust is the big issue. You know, that's the hard part for most of the people that I deal with, is how to break through into that trust. You know, I know you've been extremely successful. What advice do you have for those that are struggling so much financially? I mean, we can't travel around the world.
We can't even travel because of natural events.
Yeah, slightly, yes.
Mother Earth is flexing a muscle there.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah, we got grounded again
difficult.
Today, didn't we?
I know. And I was just watching this CNN tonight, and they're speaking about now a bailout package for Europe. And
right.
It seems like the investments now are moving to the east. Like the people who are seeking security at that level are moving their investments to, you know, what they consider to be safer havens in eastern currencies.
Right.
But it's challenging. I think one of the things to realize at that level of development is that no matter how much money or possessions that one has, it really doesn't make any difference. I mean, as Tony Robbins once said, he said the only good thing about money is that you can arrive at your problems in style.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
It's a good one, right?
It is. That's a very good one. It really is. You know, you talk about the shadow part of us brings up inauthentic emotions. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I sure can. And, you know, this is one of my favorite topics from the book, and I have to credit Ken Wilber and his people at the Integral Institute for really bringing this out. And it's finally hitting mainstream media. I know there's some work by Debbie Ford and Deepak Chopra on the movie they have, The Shadow Effect, and also on their work. And I think this is, well, let's start with an image first. If you imagine a half moon, mm-hmm. and you can see one half, which is bright and shining, but the other half is in shadow. Mm-hmm. Now, the metaphor that I use is that if you take a shuttle and fly into the dark side of the moon, you're going to crash and burn and do a lot of damage and probably damage to other people as well. So the shadow is the same thing. It's a fundamental aspect of ourselves that we simply deny or are not willing to accept. Now, what are we denying and what are we not willing to accept? We are denying or not willing to accept parts of ourselves. Now, these generally show up, our shadow shows up as emotions. Mm-hmm. So life is your teacher, life is your trigger. I remember when I started coaching, you know, I used to do a lot of work with triggers and have people spotting triggers. But what's interesting is if you accept the possibility that life is your trigger, and then you only have to look at the emotions that are arising. Now, in the uncommon path, what I say is that 9 out of 10 emotions that arise are a reflection of a part of you that you have denied. They are a reflection of your own shadow.
Now, I totally agree.
Yeah. Now, shadow can contain both good, quote unquote, and bad parts of ourselves. So, for instance, bad parts might be anger or confusion or frustration, for example. Good parts can include potential, joy, and peace.
Right.
So the shadow is not only, you know, it's a strange name because a lot of people will say the shadow only has holds bad parts of ourselves that we have repressed or denied, but it actually holds also really, really beautiful parts of ourselves that we have repressed or denied.
Yeah.
So the question would become then, how can we tell if we have shadow?
Mm.
Right? So I give a couple of points or a number of points in the book, and one of them is, are you occasionally of the opinion that other people don't care enough?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or do you blame others for their insensitive ways? Or are there situations in which you just can't stand the way another person is being? Right? So
yeah,
let's say
you
step into the presence of an individual and all of a sudden you're overcome with a particular emotion. There's a 90% chance that that's reflecting a part of your shadow. As I spoke to another radio show last week, and the host, Stuart Friedman, he said, my grandfather used to say, if you can spot it, you've got it.
Excellent. I like that. I like that.
So that's a very simple way of identifying if you have shadow.
Yeah. I think a lot of times people forget that shadow can mean darkness, but it also means comfort. If it's in the warm summer day, you step into the shadow and it's comforting. So I think that's the good side of shadow. You know, I really do. It's just my simplistic way of looking at shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's people often ask, like, how can I spot a shadow that is indicating I have repressed my own potential, that I am not willing to own a very beautiful and very powerful part of myself. And I always say that if you notice yourself becoming jealous or envious of another person or a situation, there's a good chance that what you're seeing in that other person is actually within yourself, but you have yet to bring that out.
Mm.
So the emotion of jealousy in 9 out of 10 times, it's actually reflecting the fact that you're repressing your own potential.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Just think all those jealous people out there can stop and look back and say, what am I avoiding?
What am I avoiding? Well, here's what they're avoiding. They're avoiding actually owning that potential. They're avoiding owning for some reason along the way. And people often ask, like, how is shadow created? And I have this very simple story of, imagine a 6-year-old child or a 7-year-old child is watching his parents argue.
Mm-hmm.
And inside the subjective emotional state of that child, it could be, let's say, it could be anger, it could be frustration, and it could be hopelessness, for instance, mm-hmm. because he wants his parents to stop, but he can't make them stop. And at one point, he'll approach, and maybe he'll, you know, shout out, please stop, stop, I can't stand this, right? Now, his mom may turn to him and say, you know, please go back in your room and let your parents have a discussion, or something like this.
Yeah.
At that point, he is becoming aware that these two people are his lifeline.
Uh-huh.
But he can't express his anger in a healthy way, or his confusion, or his frustration in a healthy way. Therefore, the only thing he can do with that is deny it. The only thing he can do with that is bury it.
Right.
So we start this process when we're very young, because our parents don't educate us about shadow. Right? They don't teach us about shadow in high school.
Right.
Right? This is not in the curriculum yet, because the educational system in the most evolved country in the world, which is currently the United States, hasn't actually come up to this level. They're still teaching us about things that are, you know, quite archaic, quite useful, but as consciousness is moving forward, they haven't included shadow on the curriculum yet, and it will come eventually. So here's,
you think it'll be in our lifetime?
Oh, I highly doubt it. I hope we have enough time left.
You too.
I hope we have enough time left. So the child then begins to build this shadow of anger or frustration or confusion or whatever those emotions might be. They're going to come out all over the place. And eventually they come out as, for instance, as unnecessary suffering in a relationship that person develops, let's say with a boyfriend or girlfriend, or as they grow up. They will eventually see the other person as being angry or as being inconsiderate. Like, you are very closed, right? When someone says that, what's going on there is that because this shadow has built up and built up over the years, the only way we think we can rid ourselves of it is by projection. So I'm going to put it on you. I'm going to say, you're difficult. Or I may say, life is difficult. Mm-hmm. What I really need to say to myself is, I am difficult. I am the stubborn one. I am the one who is closed. I am the one who is angry. Right. Now, can we get to that level of subjective intimacy? Can we get to that level of ownership? That's what this whole chapter 2 in the book is all about. And,
right.
And it's purposefully placed at the beginning of the book to reveal this really powerful and simple technique.
Right. That's where the resistance comes in, right?
Well, even resistance itself can be shadow.
Right.
I mean, think about it. If there's somebody that you know, and they seem to be resisting change, and you might say something like, oh, God, I wish that person would change. I wish they would be more adaptable. I wish she would be more flexible. 9 out of 10 times, that's the projection. And what really should be going on is, I need to be more flexible. Or
mm-hmm.
I need not to be so inflexible. Or I need to be open to change.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting? So we're turning it all on ourselves. Because if it's out there, it's in here.
I agree with that. So this whole section that you did about the grace of resistance and change and changelessness and the chaos and serenity all ties in, yeah?
It all ties in, and you know, it all leads up to the core exercises in the book, because one of my goals in The Uncommon Path was to leave the reader with something to do. Because I remember...
You did.
I did, right? In
you
all
did.
50 pages. I'm sorry. My apologies to anyone who doesn't like heavy books, but...
this is not meant for kindergarten.
No. Maybe someday they'll be smart enough to read it in kindergarten. But I remember reading books starting in the 80s and through the 90s and I would read a wonderful book, and there may have been a state shift, or you would glimpse the awareness of the author of the book. But when the book was finished, and I would read, you know, I'm a type of person who reads a book if I like it 2, 3, 4, or 20 times. Like, I really owned the content in the book. But sometimes there was nothing to do. Like, how do I actually apply this in the context of my relationships, my job, finding my purpose, expressing my full potential for the sake of humanity, or with my mother-in-law? Like, how do I actually apply this massive wisdom that I just read about in the context of my own kitchen table? So that's what I wanted to do with The Uncommon Path. So all of these chapters, the chapter on the shadow, the chapter on the grace of resistance, the chapters on awakening conversations and awakening relationships, even the chapter on karma, they all lead up to the four insights in the book, which contain the exercises that are really quite powerfully shift perspectives.
Okay. And so this all ties into we're not our thoughts. It's still all the same thing, right?
Well, there's one of the statements from, I think that's from the first insight where we're looking to renounce conditioned motives, and this is a very simple question: who you are is not your thoughts. Now, right. how fully do you agree with that? Because on one hand, it's very important that we can think. That's very important. It's also very important that we can actually be objective on the thinking mind, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to meditate, or we'd all be in mental institutions. So, which is true. So, the idea of a statement like that is to really pry open the awareness of the reader, because we are so conditioned by our cultures to believe that our thoughts actually have some meaning, which they do, but also they don't. Now, what is the most advanced or the most beneficial perspective to have on the thinking mind? Well, it's neither to be wrapped up in the thinking mind, like to be lost in your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And also, it's not to run away from the thinking mind. For instance, in meditation, where you're trying to completely disown the self, disown the ego, even disown the world. The right. optimal position is the optimal perspective is what Genpo Roshi would call the apex position. So if you take a triangle, and on the bottom left would be the thinking mind, on the bottom right would be the non-thinking mind, and on the top would be the perspective that it transcends and includes both. Okay. So you embrace the thinking mind, you're not afraid of it, but at the same time you understand what it is to go beyond the thinking mind. So it's a completely new way of dealing with and living with the monkey mind, because the monkey mind is always going to be the monkey mind. It's never going to shut up, never.
So that's why thoughts are harmless, right?
So thoughts are they incarnate completely harmlessly.
Yeah. harmlessly. Just what and we do with them.
It's just what we do with them, and most of that is culturally conditioned. I mean, there's a great example. If a Christian, let's say a contemplative Christian monk, who has been practicing meditation in a monastery in some island off the coast of Greece or something for 20 years, let's say he has a spiritual experience, it's very likely that he will interpret that in the context of Christianity. He may mention seeing Jesus or seeing God or seeing the Virgin or something like this, which is, for him, could be perfectly true. And depending on his level of development, he could actually be able to transmit quite a non-dual experience, or at least an awakening experience, by describing that event to you. But at the same time, there may be a Buddhist monk somewhere in northern India who meditates, and it's likely that he's going to see some particular Buddha or some Bodhisattva.
Ah.
Right?
I get you.
Right. So here, even our cultural conditioning can even affect how we interpret our meditation experiences. So the key is just simply to become aware of this, because when you become aware of this, you can see how we can honor and allow all of these different perspectives, but not that any one is specifically more advanced or better than the other, because the Christian monk is simply meditating in the context of where he was born. Is he aware of the power of cultural conditioning has on his thoughts, and even on his ability to interpret a spiritual experience?
Right. I like that. I really do. I like that. So anyone can learn to discern and disregard consciously, right?
Anyone can. This is true. It's like riding a bike, right? You fall off a couple of times, and then once you learn, you never forget.
So what would you tell somebody would be the early stages of how to do it? I know they need to buy your book, but just give them a hint.
Well, I think I always recommend the practice of sitting, which is the practice of, you know, also known as meditation. But right. The practice of being, of learning to be okay with your body, with learning to be okay with your emotions, and with learning to be okay with your particular thinking mind, whatever that's giving you. Okay. And the only way that you can prove to yourself that you are superbly and absolutely okay with your body, your emotions, and your thinking mind is to sit still for an hour or two. That's the only way you're going to prove it. Because in taking a position of physical stillness in relationship to this, let's say, endless drive to always be doing, having, doing, getting, when you say to yourself, I'm going to place my free will, my conscious free will, beyond every culturally conditioned drive that I have, including the physical drives, that's a very powerful step to take in relationship to learning what we're speaking about here is how to discern thoughts that are really not, don't serve you anymore.
Yeah.
But the only way to learn to be fully, well, let's say, as fully objective as you possibly can on the thinking mind is to go beyond the whole thing while you're sitting in meditation. And the only way to do that is by practice. So that, I would say, will be one of the first practices that any individual can take up. And it only takes 5 minutes a day to begin, 5 or 10 minutes.
I was just going to ask you, because you said an hour, and I'm like, you know, a lot of people with their lives, and I happen to be one of them, we don't have an hour that we can pull out separately. And so I just wonder, what does that person do?
Well, it's starting with 5 or 10 minutes and then noticing the differences that can make over a long period of time, let's say over a period of a couple of months.
Right.
And then maybe making time for a retreat, like finding a teacher that you're drawn to and going on a retreat, on a meditation retreat, where you actually do have the time to sit and to contemplate and to be with like-minded people, where the idea is solely to create this space out of our busy lives. Because you're right, this is quite an obstacle that a lot of us face is this, you know, this insane busyness. And what happens is, you know, we certainly do learn and get wiser, but we also get older. And the major questions that we're looking to answer, such as who am I and how should I live and what is my purpose or does life have a purpose or where are we going with all of this? These questions never seem to get answered.
Right.
And I think, you know, the universe is calling us, at least some of us, to at least answer these questions as best we can, and then move forward from there.
Okay. That's interesting. It's just that I have so many people that are in contact with me that they're holding down like 2 and 3 jobs just to survive.
Right.
And they'll say to me, where am I supposed? It's not that they're trying to just be busy for the sake of being busy. They're trying to keep a roof over their head and food in their kids' stomachs.
Right.
And so they're trying to figure out, how am I supposed to do this? Now, one of the suggestions I came up with, and I really would like your thinking on this, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because their lives are really chaotic, not by their own doing, just because life is chaotic, especially at this time, I suggest that they actually use a mantra to help just calm them enough, because they say they'll sit there and they're actually ready to just jump out of their skin. And so they don't end up sitting. And with a mantra, they've been able to slow enough that they've been able to actually sit for a few minutes. And I don't know if that it goes against what you're teaching or if it'll lead them down that path.
Well, you know, I think any technique, Helen, that will allow a person who is dealing with situations like that to sit still for a minute or 2 or 5 minutes, I think is wonderful.
Okay.
And I I have a whole bevy of recommendations. You know, like there are counting exercises that people do. There's koan practice that you can do with, you know, if you're involved with a Zen center. I mean, there are all these mind training exercises. And in the Uncommon Path, what I suggest is maybe one of the most, what's the word? Let's say challenging, but yet advanced, types of practices, which you're simply sitting and being okay with what's going on. Because right. at some point we have to realize that the ego, right, which is what the character we're seeking out in spiritual development, not so much to kill it, but just to objectify it, just to identify it, right? The pain body, as Eckhart Tolle called it many, many years ago. It feeds on suffering. And mm-hmm. it feeds on this desire to always be moving, to always, always be moving. Because it's the ego figures that if you're going to sit there for 10 minutes, it doesn't really have a role anymore. So to the ego, meditation looks like death.
Right.
So at some point, what we're doing here is we're actually making a choice. We're saying that I'm more interested in being still and discovering my full potential than I am in continuing to run.
Right.
Now, as you said, if you're holding down two jobs and you need to feed, you know, a number of family members, then this is going to be incredibly challenging. But maybe at that point also what the point of focus of the meditation practice could become is getting beyond that particular level of survival. Right? That level of survival.
Right. Well, I've only thrown the mantra out there as a last resort because, you know, when they're saying, the chaos seems to be so chaotic mm-hmm. that they just can't stay there. And I wondered what your thinking was as just a starting point.
The mantra is one thing, and you know I also find mantras are very helpful for getting asleep too. When the mind is really crazy at nighttime, it's good to have your mantra and repeat it as you're falling asleep. It tends right. to lull you off there nicely. But another thing that people could do too is to actually pay attention to the, not so much the thinking mind, but what emotions are also arising. Because usually when an individual is that crazy, there'll be associated emotions. So
right.
there could be, let's say, frustration or confusion or even hopelessness, right? Or helplessness, for instance. Or maybe even panic in the case of some people who actually have, you know, actually will manifest a physical manifestation of an emotion.
And I get those calls all the time.
There you go. So I think the shadow technique in the Uncommon Path will be very helpful there to simply identify the emotion that's arising.
Right.
And then just say to themselves, right, this frustration is mine. This mm-hmm. confusion is mine. So we're re-owning parts of ourselves that for whatever reasons and wherever it happened along the way, we have denied.
Okay.
Because the Freudian ego, right, the self-organizing principle of the psyche, that which can empower us to go beyond these levels of survival into abundance at all levels,
mm-hmm.
the Freudian ego is actually, it's a self-writing entity, and the story I use with this is if you imagine those Coast Guard rescue boats, they can go out in really heavy seas because when they flip over in stormy seas, they actually right themselves.
Uh-huh.
The boat actually knows which way is up and it actually flips back around and the rescuers can keep moving. So the self-organizing principle that each one of us has because of our humanity is a self-righting entity. And if we feed it the right information, it actually knows what to do with it all by itself. All we have to do is just give ourselves the correct information. So if a person is feeling frustration or confusion or anger or impatience or what was the other one we used? A hopelessness. Right? To just own those emotions. This hopelessness is mine. Right?
Okay.
This confusion is mine. So what they're doing is they're owning their own shadow, and they're reintegrating it. They're feeding themselves the information, and the ego, the Freudian ego, will right itself. And what they're going to find themselves doing is making different kinds of choices, responding differently to their life situations. And that's how change is going to occur. So I think between the mantra, a little bit of meditation, and the shadow work, I think you could actually see tremendous growth in a very short space of time.
I see growth. I do. Some of them it takes a little bit longer, and that's fine. You know, we all take the journey we're supposed to take. And so, but I do see growth. I want you to know that. Now, let's go over to your fourth insight, our full potential. I want to end on a real positive aspect here. Well, we discussed a lot of serious stuff today. You know, you said one thing, and I really want people to hear your elaboration on this. You said awakened love is perfectly conditional. I always heard it was unconditional. What do you mean?
Well, okay, this is, again, another huge point, but...
It's okay.
Essentially,
we have time.
Okay. The basis for an awakened relationship is essentially that you care more about the spiritual development of the other person than you do about your own subjective state. Mm-hmm. Or in other words, you care more about the spiritual development of the other person or other people than you do about how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're in the presence of an awakened teacher, sometimes the answer they give you is not the answer you want to hear.
Right.
Because they care about your growth. They can see the seed of potential that's resting dormant within. And the only way to draw that out is to give you the answer that you need to hear. Now, I call this, it's like an Enola Gay, you know, the name of the plane that drops the bomb.
Yes.
Right. So the Enola Gay is this direct, pointed answer. Sometimes it hurts. But the teacher's goal is to actually awaken your full potential. Like he doesn't have a personal goal, because his goal is to help you evolve. So in awakened relationships, the love is perfectly conditional, because the basis of the relationship is no longer primarily to do with the feelings and the personal experiences of the individual. It has a much larger scope than that. Now, we've been pretty much focused on this for the last, let's say, 100 years since psychotherapy first emerged, right? We've been focused on developing the small self.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm putting forth in the last chapter of the book, and of course in the entire book itself, is to begin to embrace self-development, small self, but for the sake of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a much bigger picture. It leads in a much different direction. It produces a much more powerful results for the sake of the world. Right? And if we're going to come together to solve some of the issues that we're dealing with, right, we're going to have to be very, very diligent in the relationships that we form and why we're in these particular relationships.
Right, that collective consciousness.
Exactly.
Right. Oh, Mick, you have just inspired me. Your book inspired me, and now talking to you has inspired me, and I know you've inspired everybody out there. I just can't thank you enough for all the information you've left us to ponder.
You're most welcome.
I want to ask you, when's your next book coming out?
Well, it'll be a while. I think we decided to put a significant amount of work into this book, because one of my daemons, you know, the opposite to demon is a daemon, and one of my daemons is writing, and when I start, I can't really stop, so I have to be very careful, because it ends up taking, you know, 16 or 18 hours of my day. So I think it'll be a while before the next one is allowed to emerge.
Well, again, I just can't thank you enough. This has been such a special time with you, and
thanks, Helen.
I just really appreciate it so very much. I want to thank all of our listeners for being part of Fine Tune You and helping hold this sacred space. It's always so great to connect with all of you, and it's such a joy. Now, next week, we're going to continue our series on choices. And remember, May 23rd, our special guest will be Patricia McGovern. And we're going to be talking about angel babies, messages from miscarried and other lost babies. We look forward to each of you joining us next week, when we will continue to fine-tune you. Have a wonderful evening. Aloha.